Istanbul Train, written by Graham Greene and read by Michael Maloney.
Everything in nature is lyrical in its ideal essence, tragic in its fate, and comic in its existence. George Santayana. Part 1. Ostend. Chapter 1. The purser took the last landing card in his hand and watched the passengers cross the grey wet quay over a wilderness of rails and points, round the corners of abandoned trucks. They went with coat collars turned up and hunched shoulders. On the tables in the long coaches, lamps were lit and glowed through the rain like a chain of blue beads. A giant crane swept and descended, and the clatter of the winch drowned for a moment the pervading sounds of water, water falling from the overcast sky, water washing against the sides of channel steamer and quay. It was 4:30 in the afternoon.
"A spring day, my God," said the purser aloud, trying to dismiss the impressions of the last few hours, the drenched deck, the smell of steam and oil and stale bass from the bar, the shuffle of black silk, as the stewardess moved here and there carrying tin basins. He glanced up the steel shafts of the crane to the platform and the small figure in blue dungarees turning a great wheel, and felt an unaccustomed envy. The driver up there was parted by 30 feet of mist and rain from purser, passengers, the long-lit express. "I can't get away from their damned faces," the purser thought, recalling the young Jew in the heavy fur coat, who had complained because he had been allotted a two-berth cabin. "For 2 godforsaken hours, that's all." He said to the last passenger from the second class, "Not that way, miss. The custom shed's over there." His mood relaxed a little at the unfamiliarity of the young face. This one had not complained. "Don't you want a port of your bag, miss?"
"I'd rather not," she said. "I can't understand what they say. It's not heavy."
She wrinkled her mouth at him over the top of her cheap white Macintosh.
"Unless you'd like to carry it, Captain?"
Her impudence delighted him.
"Ah, if I were a young man now, you wouldn't be wanting a porter. I don't know what they're coming to."
He shook his head as the Jew left the customs shed, picking his way across the rails in grey suede shoes, followed by 2 laden porters.
"You going far?"
"All the way," she said, gazing unhappily past the rails, the piles of luggage, the lit lamps in the restaurant car, to the dark, waiting coaches.
"Got a sleeper?"
"No."
"You ought to have a sleeper," he said. "Going all the way like that. 3 nights in a train, it's no joke. What do you want to go to Constantinople for anyway?
Getting married?" "Not that I know of."
She laughed a little through the melancholy of departure and the fear of strangeness.
"One can't tell, can one?"
"Work?"
"Dancing. Variety."
She said goodbye and turned from him. Her Macintosh showed the thinness of her body, which even while stumbling between the rails and sleepers, retained its self-consciousness. A signal lamp turned from red to green, and a long whistle of steam blew through an exhaust. Her face, plain and piquant, her manner daring and depressed, lingered for a moment in his mind.
"Remember me," he called after her. "I'll see you again in 1 or 2.
But he knew that he would not remember her. Too many faces would peer during the following weeks through the window of his office, wanting a cabin, wanting money changed, wanting a berth, for him to remember an individual. And there was nothing remarkable about her. When he went on board, the decks were already being washed down for the return journey, and he felt happier to find the ship empty of strangers. This was how he would have liked it always to be, a few dagos to boss in their own tongue, a stewardess with whom to drink a glass of ale. He grunted at the seamen in French, and they grinned at him, singing an indecent song of a cocu that made his plump family's soul wither a little in envy.